Did you know that collagen makes up 30% of the protein in your body? It's the substance that gives structure, support, and strength to your skin, muscles, bones, and connective tissues. Collagen is what keeps our skin firm and youthful, preventing it from sagging. It also supplies amino acids that are crucial for building healthy hair and protecting hair follicles. The collagen supplement that I use and recommend to my patients is Revive by Bright Core Nutrition. Revive combines five types of collagen with hyaluronic acid and biotin to heal and nourish your skin, hair, and nails. Studies show that collagen also helps relieve joint inflammation and pain. If you're looking to heal your body from the inside out and reverse some effects of aging, Revive could be your answer. For more information and to order, visit mybrightcore.com/Hoffman. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman or call 888-592-9909. That's 888-592-9909. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, buy two bottles of Revive and get one free, plus a collagen sheet mask as a free gift. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman for Revive Multi-Collagen Protein. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly opportunity to field your questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. That's .net, not .com. And with us is Layla Mutin, whose name is lent to the title of today's podcast, Q&A with Layla. Okay, appropriately enough.
That's me.
That's right. Very good. So, how you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you? I can't believe it's October.
It is October. Yes, it is. And it feels very Octoberish. It's sort of, it's kind of an Indian summer, I guess. Mm-hmm. Nice temperatures, clear skies here in New York, beautiful weather. And there's a hint of autumn in the air. So, it's a great time to be in the Northeast. Maybe not a great time to be in the Southeast because, it's incredible as it may seem, we're enjoying great weather and people in Florida, big hurricanes just bearing down on them once again. So,
oh my goodness, yeah.
So consider yourself fortunate not to be in the target of the hurricane. The rest of you who are digging out, and I actually have acquaintances in Asheville, a beautiful town, which was devastated by the hurricane. It's an unusual situation because, you know, generally think of hurricanes as coastal phenomena, but the folks in the mountainous region of western North Carolina got hammered, also in eastern Tennessee and to some extent in Georgia. So, it's a tough situation for especially the mountain folk in remote areas, but even, you know, people in a metropolitan area of Asheville really experienced a lot of devastation. So we just wish them well, all the best in their recovery efforts. It's a beautiful town.
In our prayers, yes.
Blue Ridge Mountain area is just a gorgeous part of the country.
So, Dr. Hoffman, I understand you were recently at a reunion.
Yes, indeed. I went to my 55th high school reunion. Having attended, you know, a lot of the reunions, you know, possibly, I don't know if I went to the 10th, but I went to the 20th, the 30th, the 40th, the 50th, I think, and now the 55th, because, you know, we don't want to take the chance of waiting 10 years, because things get a little serious here, you know, when we get to these reunions. We're playing for keeps now. It's not a foregone conclusion that everybody's going to be there at every reunion. And, you know, our school mascot, we were the Santa Monica High School Vikings, and we have a special page in our yearbook, which is the Valhalla page, those of our Vikings who've gone on to Valhalla. The toll is unfortunately increasing. And so, you know, it's a very interesting phenomenon. It's like in physics, you know, we haven't demonstrated that it's possible for humans to time travel, but the closest approximation to time travel is to go to your 55th high school reunion, because you see the kids that literally you went to elementary school with in some cases, certainly high school and possibly junior high school. And, and you know, it's like putting a, like one of those aging filters on people, and you just see how people have progressed through life, how they, you know, how they've weathered, the rate at which they're aging, which, you know, varies tremendously at this age. You know, there are some 70-year-olds who really look like they're in their 40s. I count myself lucky that I look relatively young. And then there are other people who, even since the last reunion, you could see that they experience a bit of an aging spurt. But nonetheless, you know, there are a lot of, you know, healthy, active individuals. And at this point of the game, most people are retired or semi-retired. They've completed their, you know, professional incarnation. And, you know, many are engaged in, you know, volunteer activities and spending time with family, grandkids, sometimes even great-grandkids. And, you know, it's great to see how people are making their way through the world. You know, many having had, you know, very successful careers. You know, what's interesting is that the nerdy kids who used to hang out in the computer room and walked around with pocket protectors and slide rules, they did really well. They did really well. They were on the right track. They got into, you know, that, you know, tech revolution. Somewhere in Silicon Valley and, you know, that whole thing. And they made pretty good careers for themselves.
The benefits of using pocket protectors and slide rules.
Exactly.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, so I had a good time. Yeah. I one of my friends had a spare bike, and we took a beautiful bike trip down the California coast. He lives in Venice, and we cycled down to Hermosa Beach, which is about 10 miles out and 10 miles back. You know, just a nice, manageable little bike ride. And, you know, celebrating our relative physical fitness. And it was just, you know, a lot of fun. Listened to some music at a concert there. You know, dug up some old friends. Went to the Getty Museum, which is beautiful. Out in California, in Southern California and Los Angeles area. And, you know, just it was very, very invigorating, you know. So So good experience overall.
Wonderful. Sounds great. Nice to get out of New York City for a period of time, too.
Yeah, indeed it is. So without further ado, you know, I might talk a little bit about some of the things that I've been working on. You know, you'll hear about it in podcasts, and this will actually be the subject of a newsletter article that I'm writing. But a couple of interesting things in the news. One is some interesting research on the gut-heart connection. Okay. So, you know, we get the gut-brain connection, you know, we know about that, right? You know, there's even relationship to, you know, food, mood, but also the microbiome and its impact on anxiety and depression, and even Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease, according to the latest research. And then there's more on the relationship between the microbiome and, you know, metabolism, you know, that you can actually transplant bacteria from a fat mouse into a skinny mouse and make the skinny mouse fat.
Yeah.
Conversely, you know, take from a skinny mouse and make a fat mouse lose weight, even though they're eating a similar diet.
Yeah.
All that stuff, quite interesting. Okay, so now there's a heart gut connection, the heart gut axis. And it even relates to a condition like atrial fibrillation. There was a big study in Lancet that showed that you could predict the development of atrial fibrillation 15 years hence. It could be reliably predicted on the basis of the prevalence of 8 different species of gut bacteria. They identified 8 types of gut bacteria whose presence indicated a propensity to atrial fibrillation. Very interesting. And then there's atherosclerosis, where a study has shown that disturbances in the balance of the gut bacteria may increase the risk of atherosclerosis by having an impact, of course, on metabolism, obesity, insulin resistance, and even inflammation. So, yeah, so add heart disease to the plethora of conditions impacted by gut health. It's one of the things I'm working on in our newsletter. Also, you know, the lockdown, you know, the curious thing happened because obviously the death rate increased during COVID, right? But now very few people are dying from COVID, but the death rate is still up. So they're saying, well, what's happening? Are, you know, people, are these the last lingering casualties of COVID, or like the people rendered sick by COVID? Are they dying off? And it's no, it's actually a continuation of a previous trend that predated COVID, is that Americans are dying younger. And there's obviously an increase because of lockdown and because of the stress of COVID. There was an increase in the deaths of despair. You know, they closed the gyms, but they kept the pot shops, and they kept the
and the liquor stores open,
of course. And the deaths of despair increased from suicide, alcohol, drugs, and even homicides, right? Because crime rate soared ultimately. And so there was a study done in France. It's a big survey called the Nutrinet Santé. You know, santé is like the toast in French, you know, to your health. It's like cheers, l'chaim, you know, santé. Santé means health. It revealed that during the lockdowns, a lot of people's health went south. There were unfavorable lifestyle trends. Decreased physical activity reported by 53% of the participants. Increased sedentary time reported by 63%. Increased snacking, decreased consumption of fresh food, especially fruit and fish. And, of course, the munchies. Increased consumption of sweets, cookies, and cakes. And so I think that is contributing to the continuation of a trend, which is we're having shortened lifespans and shortened health spans. And so America's health continues its downward trajectory. And part of it is a kind of an unforced error, is that we, you know, COVID took its toll, but we augmented the toll that COVID took by enforcing lockdowns, which were really not good for our mental and physical well-being.
No, not at all. And we're seeing an even longer term as this plays out, the actual human cost of the lockdowns themselves, aside from COVID.
Which
is really telling.
Well, you know, the delay in the kids' education, interruption of kids' education,
and,
you know, the impact on children's health.
And their socialization and their IQs and all of that has been impacted.
Yeah. And, you know, you might say, well, what would have happened if we just had a let or rip approach? Well, I don't think anybody suggested that. I think the Great Barrington resolution or manifesto suggested a kind of a targeted approach to COVID. But in countries where there was less stringent lockdowns, I think Sweden was an example of which, you know, it's a civilized country, and they protected the vulnerable and the elderly. Their outcomes were ultimately better. I mean, they still had a...
Yeah.
I mean, it ripped through the populace there, but they didn't have any worse mortality from COVID, and ultimately they got through it with less in the way of social disruption and health consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so those are some of the things that I've been reflecting on, and you'll read about them in the newsletter, and you'll hear about them on
Looking
the weekly radio
to
program. Oh, here's just another, while I'm talking about things that I just did a very interesting interview yesterday. Okay, you know about stool analysis. A lot of people do stool analysis. You know, they send in stool to measure the, you know, to look at the intestinal microbiome and to see if they have optimal blend of bacteria or whether they have dysbiosis, right? So it's not just like, do I have a parasite? Do I have, you know, like E. coli pathogen or, you know, some of the things like food poisoning. It's now like, you know, give me a report card on my intestinal microbiome. Okay, there's this new thing for women. It's called EVI. Mm-hmm. It's the vaginal microbiome. And it's a similar idea.
Oh, wow.
Because you can tell a lot about a woman's health based on the vaginal microbiome. And it has implications for fertility, for risk of even serious diseases like ovarian cancer and endometriosis. They actually, certain profiles of, you know, imbalance are associated with those conditions. But also, you know, if you've got problems, a lot of women have problems. You know, they have like problems with a lot of discharge, odor, discomfort, and a lot can be revealed from a sample of the vaginal microbiome. So there's a company that does it. It's called EVI. I think it's EVVY.com. So listen for that podcast, especially if you're a woman, because it, I think it's opening up a whole area of possibilities. And it's not just for women who have problems. It's, you know, you might want to just, you know, check it out because it's
check it out. And
It's not something that OBGYNs are going to perform for you, although many are now embracing the EVI platform as a way of, you know, augmenting the just usual physical exam they do on women.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
Not good just stuff. For the regular old yeast infection anymore, you know.
It's way beyond,
or vaginosis. Yeah,
it's way beyond, you know, do you need antifungal medication, you know, do you need Monistat or do you need Diflucan or do you need, antibiotics? Like, goes way beyond that.
Yeah. Interesting. Finding out. All right.
So before we get to questions, maybe we can take care of business because we would like to share an important message with our listeners. So listen up. Here goes. You've heard me say for years that NT Factor is the breakthrough supplement that's proven to repair and renew your body's cells. That includes your immune cells, such as your T cells and white blood cells. NT Factor has been shown to contribute to a more robust and effective immune response. So now that we're in cold and flu season, NT Factor is combining with powerful antioxidants, vitamin C and D, to provide you with an immune booster bundle. Vitamin C and D help stimulate the production of white blood cells and activate immune cells, which play a key role in defending against pathogens. Together with NT Factor, they help modulate immune function, reduce inflammation, and promote overall immune health. For a limited time, buy a bottle of NT Factor with D3K2 and get a bottle of C1000 with NT Factor absolutely free. That's a savings of over $26. Just go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Save over $26 on the powerful cocktail of vitamins C and D with NT Factor at ntfactor.com. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors, because they, of course, are what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource for you through their generous underwriting. And now back to our questions. What do we have, Leila?
We've got an email here from Fran. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Leila. Does cat's claw, the herb cat's claw, does it seem safe for someone who's had breast cancer?
Okay.
Now,
well, you know, cat's claw is something that I don't use that much. I think
I
it's got
either.
Anti-inflammatory properties. So it's
anti-inflammatory, maybe antiviral, maybe protective against cancer. But I think what cat's claw, the herb, is used most for is arthritis, whether osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis.
Right.
May be beneficial.
And I think it's one of those South American herbs, right, from the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Peru,
okay.
Yeah.
So it's from the Inca tradition, that of the indigenous...
Right.
Herbal medicine.
It's called the life-giving plants of Peru, and it does date back to the Inca civilization. It's actually a woody vine that's native to the Amazon rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there considerable research on it, or is it one of the things that has been, you know, it's probably less investigated than some of our commonly used herbs like, curcumin, for example, you know, or ginkgo biloba. You know, where there's
right. I don't think it's as researched as those. Mm-hmm. But the benefits that are touted are, again, arthritis. Mm-hmm. It may fight cancer. It can repair DNA. It may lower high blood pressure.
Okay. Well, it has adaptogenic effects. Mm-hmm. You know, and many herbs have, mm-hmm. you know, multifactorial benefits. The reason to think that it might have an impact on breast cancer, a negative impact, is if it had a hormonal effect. So, yeah. you know, things that are like isoflavones, like soy, mm-hmm. there's some controversy, you know, soy is estrogenic. Well, is that, I mean, is it a good estrogen or a bad estrogen? Certain estrogens block the estrogen receptors in the breast, and certain of them can activate the estrogen receptors. And, you know, so there's been some controversy over soy isoflavones that are sometimes used mm-hmm. for menopausal symptoms. But I see no reason why cat's claw should be in that category of things. So I don't think there's a downside. Yeah. I just have to say, I have to admit that I'm not the biggest user of cat's claw.
I've not been.
Yeah.
It's used as traditional medicine by indigenous peoples in the Andes to treat inflammation, rheumatism, gastric ulcer, dysentery, mm-hmm. and even tumors.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just, you know, it's on my radar screen, but it's kind mm-hmm. of out in the periphery a little bit. But I can say that, if anything, there might be some cancer preventive effects, right?
Yeah. There may be some cancer.
And that's this person's concern, right? Because of
mm-hmm. yes, possibly because she's had cancer.
A history of breast cancer, yeah. Okay, well, I would say,
I don't see anything here that says that it may be estrogenic mm-hmm. or problematic in that sense.
Yeah. No, I give it a green light.
So, So, Fran, there you go. Thank you for your very thoughtful question. Okay. Let's see here. We've got a question from John. John asks, what are the best ways to lower ApoB?
Okay, so first of all, let's define what ApoB. It's an apolipoprotein, which is mm-hmm. associated with the bad cholesterol, with LDL. But in mm-hmm. many people believe that it's a more precise measure of cardiovascular risk than LDL, because LDL can vary mm-hmm. in its atherogenicity. Okay, you can have, as you know, the large fluffy particles, the small dense particles. Small dense particles mm-hmm. are the bad LDL
and pattern B,
and the large fluffy particles are pattern A, and so apolipoprotein B is, you know, reasonably enough, it's bad, B for bad.
Yeah.
And high levels of it are pretty likely associated with cardiovascular risk. Now, that does not mean that people who have low ApoB have no cardiovascular risk, and it also doesn't mean mm-hmm. that people who have high ApoB are doomed. Because there's a concatenation of factors that are come together to consist of cardiovascular risk. So, you know, you could have, obesity and hypertension and blood sugar elevations and inflammation, or an elevated Lp(a) or, you know, some of these other factors. And in spite of a relatively good level of ApoB, you could be at risk. And conversely, high ApoB might be mitigated by these other factors not being present. But the straightaway way to lower it is statin drugs will lower it. Statin drugs will lower mm-hmm. it. And especially some of these new medications, the injectable PCSK9 inhibitors, we call them the peskies, they will actually annihilate your ApoB. They'll just lower it to low double digits. They can really drop it way down. But short of that, diet makes a difference. And, I think there's a carbohydrate contributor to ApoB, because when
when
you gain weight and when you increase your triglycerides and you have metabolic syndrome, insulin mm-hmm. resistance, your ApoB is going to go up. There may be for some people a cholesterol and saturated fat contributor to that. So, you know, maybe you want a diet that's kind of a, you know, Mediterranean diet for your ApoB. You know, we also mm-hmm. want a lot of fiber. Plant stanols are helpful for lowering ApoB. I guess Reggie's mm-hmm. rice is going to do it too, because Reggie's rice is a statin. But if you're going to take yeah. a statin, in my feeling is if you're going to go that route, you know, take a prescription statin at a low dose.
Right.
Yeah, those are some of the things that will lower. Oh, exercise will lower ApoB.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So John needs to clean up his diet and get rid of the stuff, you know, too many refined carbohydrates, bad fats, trans fats, things mm-hmm. of that nature.
Trans fats,
eat
yeah.
healthier, whole, more nutrient-dense foods, a little higher in fiber,
and so
all of that.
So here's the thing, too. You know, like, the mm-hmm. question is, do you need to lower your ApoB? And I don't think that everybody has to lower their ApoB. I think you need to take a careful look at whether ApoB is one of the risk factors that is increasing your risk of a heart attack or stroke. And so you want to do some imaging studies. And in fact, there's a trial underway using a little more advanced way of looking at the coronary arteries. We did a show on the CLEARLY test. It's actually spelled CLEERLY. And it is a CT angiogram that is analyzed via a sophisticated algorithm to show the presence not just of hard plaque, but also soft plaque, which soft plaque sometimes mm-hmm. doesn't appear on a regular, CT, you know, the so-called heart scan. And mm-hmm. so that, in conjunction with some risk factors, and I believe that they'll look at the image along with ApoB and LPA and several other risk factors and put it together with to make an assessment of how likely it is that people are going to get a heart attack or a stroke. And they're going to see if that really provides a better prognostication than our usual methods of just, oh, you know, we'll look at LDL and, you know, family history. Are you a smoker? Are you black? You're white? You're male? What's your age? You know, that's kind of a crude way of establishing whether you're at risk. But to actually image and then look at some of the risk factors and put that all together, they're going to explore whether a study gives us a really good early warning. You know, like we're getting with mm-hmm. Hurricane Milton, you know, it's like, we know. The weather reporting for hurricanes, pretty good these days. You know, we know it's going to be a class 4. Heart attacks, we're nowhere near that. We're nowhere near that. I mean, we get it we predict that maybe 50% of the time. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. We're missing the boat half the time.
Yeah.
So, so for people who have mm-hmm. like a zero calcium score, mm-hmm. for example, I have an ApoB that's a little high. I mean, it's not like super high, but it's a little high. But in view of the fact that I have a zero calcium score, I'm not going to lower it with a statin.
Right. Yeah. Avoid the statin, save your brain, is my opinion.
Yeah. Although, you know, in looking at it, I got to say that some of the studies are exonerating statins in terms of brain. But you know, why take something? Why take something unnecessarily? You know, if the number needed to treat for your circumstance is mm-hmm. like 300, that means that 299 people need to take it unnecessarily so that one person mm-hmm. might be saved. You know, why go there?
Yeah.
Why do that?
Why go there? Exactly. Yeah, a lot of doctors, however, are looking at ApoB, mm-hmm. and especially cardiologists, and it's no wonder that it's a concern.
Yeah,
for so many.
I don't want to be in that category of denialism. You know, some people say, "Well, LDL doesn't matter, ApoB doesn't matter, cholesterol doesn't matter." You know, it's like, no, it could matter. It doesn't always matter.
It could matter.
Yeah. Let's take a nuanced case by case personalized medicine approach, you know, to this rather than blanket, prescribing, you know, there's certain guidelines. Oh, you know, your ApoB is over 100, you know, you got to take a statin. Well, maybe, but not invariably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you to John for that question.
Yeah. Okay. So we blew through part one. We generally divide our podcast into two parts. Yes, time flies. And so we're going to go to part two. So give us a preview, Layla, of what we're going to talk about in part two.
Ah, we've got two questions about the same topic regarding hernia.
Oh, okay.
To mesh or not to mesh?
All right. We'll talk
that
about that.
That's the question.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, a scintillating tie. I actually have a friend, you know, I had lunch with him, and he said, you know, I can't have lunch with you because I have to undergo hernia surgery. So I said, you know, I really had a nice lunch with him. I said, well, why don't we get together, you know, you and your wife and, you know, me and my significant other. And so he says, oh, my wife is about to have hernia surgery. I said, man, I didn't know it was contagious. But, you know,
How often do you hear that?
At a certain age, you know, it becomes an issue, you know, but we'll talk a little bit about that. I said, like, whoa,
okay.
What are the chances? Like, you know, you were off the social register for a while because of that. And now I can't have dinner with you and your wife. Okay. Okay. Wow. So anyway, when we return, we'll take that up. Along with other questions, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. QuestionsDearHoffman.net gets you into our broadcast with your question or comment. Comments are welcome, and we have a couple of comments and feedback on some things that we talked about in a previous Q&A with Layla. When we return.
Okay.